X2, number 4B.
Therefore, the classical logic is rigid. The dimensional logic is evolutive, it's changing. Through that law of translatability, we can have a logic that includes a higher logic, that includes in a higher logic, a lower logic, and a still a lower logic, and still a lower logic, if we are aware that we translate the higher logic to the lower logic. And let us see one or the other example of that. Mrs. Eddy, for instance, speaks about Jesus. Jesus is a very good example for translatable logic. He says that Jesus called the body what? He called it flesh and bones. And he did that, Mrs. Eddy says, to accommodate himself to immature ideas. Can you see what he did? He translated himself to flesh and bones for the level of immature concepts. Though he knew that the substance of himself was spirit. You see what he did? He used, actually, dimensional logic. He knew what he was spirit, but he didn't say, look here, I'm spirit. He said, for your standpoint, I can translate that to the standpoint of your reasoning, and for your reasoning, that spirit is flesh and bone. That's one of the examples of greatest range, I would say, we have. You know how Dickie relates how Mrs. Eddy wanted to bring home to him her highest teaching when she wanted to tell him that his finger is spirit. Huh? And he wouldn't accept it. He always said, but this is material, this is matter. And she said, no, this is spirit. Huh? She wanted to give him that teaching which Jesus used here and say, yes, there is only spirit, that's the reality of it. No matter if you look at the finger, it's spirit, it's not material in the deepest sense. But he couldn't get it because he was not able to come to that point where she was. Therefore, she in her textbook always translates spirit right down to every level, except perhaps there where in the Apocalypse she says that spirit and matter are only states and stages of consciousness. Therefore indicating that spirit and matter is the same, it only differentiates in the standpoint of consciousness, not as a thing by itself. That the identity is the same. That what makes spirit matter is a lower approach, lower consciousness, and that what makes spirit spirit is a higher consciousness. Also that passage I already quoted in Isaiah, we read, I make peace and create evil. Peace and war. Huh? I do both. I, the Lord, do all these things, and then she explains it. But the prophet referred to divine law. Divine law? Would we say divine law brings, creates evil? We would say no. If we have only a one-level logic, we would say this is impossible, that good creates evil. The moment you have translatability, therefore dimensional logic, you can say yes. The divine law creates evil, but through translation. And we have to see what kind of translation. But the prophet referred to divine law as stirring up the belief in evil. Can you see? Translates divine to the level of belief. In belief, evil is stirred up, so divine law creates evil, but not on its own level. On another level. Is that clear? So stirring up the belief in evil to its utmost, when bringing it to the surface and reducing it, again, interesting, reducing it to its common denominator, nothingness. See, she goes right from divine law, therefore from the logic of divine science, right down to the two-valued logic, where it stirs up evil, and that evil seems to be a value. And then she goes further and translates it further to the two conceptional logic and says, but it is actually not a reality, that value, evil. I translate it and show it its nothingness, that it's only conceptional. This is dimensional logic. And you can see, if one reads such a passage with the human understanding, with human logic, it just doesn't make sense. That's all. Just doesn't make sense. That evil creates, that good creates evil. When on the other side she says dozens of times that mind, God, good, does not create evil and has no knowledge of evil. Here right away she says, no, the divine law creates evil. You see what we have to know when we read the text, we have to know, does she speak on a level law or does she speak on a dimensional law? And therefore another logic. Yes. So this is one of the important part of logic in Christian Science. Because she has these various levels, right from the level of evil up to the highest sense of oneness, we must be aware of the law of translatability. See, that's what the world is clamoring for, and in every science they don't know what that law of translatability is. They only see the phenomena, they only see the experience of that law of translatability. You know, I gave you always that example, say, of a ray of light, which is fundamentally nothing else but a wave, a certain wavelength of the electromagnetic wavelength of a certain latitude. That's all. Just electromagnetic wavelength. It's not light, it's not white, nothing like that. It's an electromagnetic wave that comes to the eye and to the retina, and it does something there. It is translated there into another current, into a sensation, into an electric current of quite a different nature that is carried on a nerve to the brain. So it is translated to another current, comes to the brain. The brain again translates it into a sensation called, say, green. I see green. Green doesn't exist. There is nothing like that, like green. Green is already a translated sense of a wavelength of a certain latitude. That's all. That's we call already green. And if it's translated in green, it is further translated somewhere by our psyche. It's translated and says, it's a beautiful green. The other says, no, it's not a beautiful green. But it's translated beautiful or not beautiful or ugly. And so initially that electromagnetic wave is suddenly either beautiful or ugly. What has an electric magnetic wave to do with beautiful? That electromagnetic wave which a physicist writes out in a symbol, in a mathematical symbol, and that's then for us green. When you read that symbol, you don't see any green, and yet it is green. Or you don't see that that symbol is ugly, but we translate it in our psyche into ugliness. Can you see the general law of translatability? one and the same phenomena going through one translation, a second translation, a third translation, a fourth translation, and every time it shows itself forth, it is something completely different. The law of identity of dear good Aristotle, says there is a law of identity, green is green. But here we have another statement which says no, green is ugly, and ugly is an electromagnetic wave, and things like that. It's always something else. Are you aware that the old way of classical scientific thinking is no more, is inadequate, to say the least? It serves for a certain purpose, but it certainly becomes inadequate and certainly does no more explain logically what's going on. We need a very different logic to know what's going on. Isn't that terrific? We come to another kind of logic, 15, to the four-valued logic. This is again a special case of the original two-valued logic. The moment we regard it from the point of view of gestalt. The moment you have gestalt viewpoint, we get a four-valued logic. I will tell you what it means. You have a case, whatever that is. From the classical logic, you regard it and you value it right or wrong. That's a dualistic, good classical logic. You can look at it from an other standpoint, and according to what that other standpoint is, if it is on another level, or from another frame of reference, that very same thing can also be again regarded and maybe evaluated just the other way around. So, if you have two standpoints that are different in their frame of reference, you have 2 times 2 values, and that's 4 values. You have 4 values on the one and the same happening or phenomena. This four-valued logic is seen so easily when we consider any case, any occasion from the gestalt standpoint. What is the gestalt standpoint? It's the standpoint of the whole, whereas the classical standpoint is the standpoint of the parts, the atomistic standpoint. If you want to put it very simply, you can say the atomistic standpoint can only give us 2 values, a two-valued logic, whereas the structural standpoint, the gestalt standpoint, the standpoint of the whole, gives us another 2 values which may not coincide in their conclusions. I give you a few examples which make it very plain what I mean, very plain, and show how practical logic is, and that if we don't see this logic and use it as practice, we are still in Christian Science practice, but here it is practice of a science, that if we don't know this logic, that we make our wrong demonstrations. We go out, let's say, from the point where we have seen as a man thinketh in his heart, so he is. A statement from the Bible a statement that appears a few times in the textbook. It's therefore teaching of the textbook. As a man thinketh, so is he. Therefore we conclude, if a man thinks wrongly, so he is sick. If a man thinks good, he is healthy. That's the two-valued logic, the classical logic. But is that actually what Mrs. Eddy teaches? Yes, she teaches that, but she also teaches the very opposite. She also teaches the very opposite, that man is the idea of God, no matter what he thinks. He still is the idea of God. Can you see that this standpoint from the whole, from God, evaluates that very man again different? Anyone who thinks logically in the old way says this is a contradictory textbook and you never know where you are. Is now man that what he thinks, or is man now that what God knows about him? Is man now a sinner, or is he always the idea of God? Can you see that from the atomistic standpoint, namely from the standpoint of our thinking, we have actually the fact that if I don't think nice and wrong, and if I think destructively, that I get sick, and I have an evaluation sickness, wrong. And at the same time, that very man is still right when looked at from the gestalt, from the whole, he's still the idea of God. He's still healthy, whole. Therefore, that very phenomena has four values. Two values, therefore, from the human, from the atomistic standpoint, either right or wrong. And he has two values from the divine standpoint, namely that only idea is right and the mortal does not exist. So I have two other values, and you have four values on that same phenomena. So that four-valued logic always comes in, therefore, in our life, when we look at an experience either from the narrow atomistic standpoint, say from the part, and we have a different reasoning when we look at it from the whole. I think we touched on it already in another sometimes this week when we were looking at the technical success of our days. There too, you see, we saw that already. But if we look out from the part, say what a factory produces, we say this is fine what they give. They give a new product and it makes life so much easier, that new product. So it's good. Looked at from the ecology, from the whole, from the gestalt of the world, we say, this is a rotten thing. It has so much poison afterwards in the water that it kills every fish and every living thing. It brings the whole ecology and out of balance, and therefore it should be forbidden. So on one side, a blessing, on the other side, it should be forbidden. That very same thing. Can you see? But the standpoint is different. So it's the gestalt attitude that gives another evaluation than the part attitude. If you take life experience, you have the very same thing, and you know it. You go through a period where you think that the whole world is breaking down on you, where you feel this is the end of it, I can't stand anything more, this is too much for me. And you look at it as if hell would be let loose, then after 20 years looking back, therefore taking in a whole view, you look at it and say, this is the best thing that could ever happen. Can you see you value it differently? No. It's always the frame of reference that gives a new value. The same thing you have with a healing. So often you don't get the healing which you like to get from the present momentary standpoint. And you don't get it, and so you say it didn't work. And when you look at it from a wider frame of reference, we say this is the best thing that could have happened. Isn't it so? See? That's what happens. And if we don't see that in practice and are, so to say, foxed by the momentary situation, we very often may say we haven't made the demonstration when we have made the demonstration. And on the other wise also, that very often we think this is a wonderful demonstration. Just everything just went fine. But afterwards we find out that it was all wrong for us. That it, within a big frame of reference, it was the worst thing that could happen, that everything just went just fine. So here we have the practical application of this four-dimensional or four-valued logic, which is absolutely important to realize. So a short-term evaluation is something else than a long-term evaluation. Short-term is looking just at the part as a part, whereas the long-term evaluation, the gestalt evaluation, looks also at the part, but valued from the whole. That's what gestalt theory wants to show. That if we evaluate the part not as the part, but as a part within the whole. Alright, that means actually, you see, that we should always find an interpretation of a situation from the structural point of view, because only the structural and gestalt point of view gives us the meaning of the part. We never find the true meaning of a part from the atomistic standpoint, because the atomistic standpoint is structure blind. It's absolutely structure blind, therefore is blind to the future, is blind to the big plan, is ignorant about the big plan, and therefore an atomistic standpoint is never giving us a true interpretation. And so it is actually with text interpretation. There the same logic appears then again, that in text interpretation we never can really get the right interpretation if the frame of reference within which we interpret the text is too small. The smaller it is, the more we can be sure that our interpretation is wrong. The wider the frame of reference is within text interpretation and taking into account the whole frame and look at that very little part, not as a part, but from the whole, then that little part can be interpreted rightly. So this four-dimensional, four-valued logic is an infinitely important logic for Christian Science. And I just can't see how the idea could ever evolve without a true text interpretation. I just don't see how one would find the deeper meaning of the textbook or of the Bible. Can you see now how text interpretation, healing, logic, all that hinges together? They are not different fields. There is one logic that is determining what is now the right demonstration. How can we evaluate what is a right demonstration in being that can interpret also rightly what is a life experience worth within our life, and can only rightly interpret also a text, a statement, rightly within the whole text. So the implications are quite large. And they are not just academic, as you see, they are very practical. Just as in the world, we see that the ecological problem is a problem of life and death. We really don't know with what we are doing from our atomistic standpoint if we are going to deprive the generation of the year 2100 of all the important raw materials we have and leave them really in a sense of barrenness if we go on like this. Because our whole attitude doesn't think logically in the four-dimensional logic. All right, we go on tonight at 7 o'clock. There's still more to come.